Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We are coming to you for the first time from our new studio in our new space, which is really exciting. So if you have not seen, if you want to see what this is visually like, and we have options too. We have a bunch of different sets. But you can go to YouTube because you can watch all these, which is really exciting. But we are here today, Phil and Diane, Elizabeth and I. We're going to respond to your questions. You send a lot in and we're really grateful for it. But we're all here and we're ready to respond. But we're also really grateful to have a space where we can record and it not be in our house. That was
works a little better not in our house.
That was becoming quite quite the situation. It was like it's too hard to mix domestic with responsibility, I think, is what that could be. Any thoughts on this, honey? I know you have a lot of thoughts actually.
I was thinking about it yesterday as so all the podcast stuff, which is quite a bit, was all like stuffed into like a storage closet in our house where the, what is that? The HVAC system is in there?
Yeah, probably some sort of fire hazard is what I'm imagining it
was. I remade it a fire hazard because then I was taking all of our luggage and putting it back in that closet.
Oh, is that where that went?
I was so excited to have storage back in our house.
Well, we're glad to be here today. Also, just thank you to everybody who's rated and subscribed, left a comment. If you haven't had a chance to do that, that helps the word get out. It helps us so much. And that's just a great way to say thank you. So if this has been helpful, please do that. Check out stuff on YouTube. And we have some stuff coming up. You surely heard an advertisement about it, but we have our next motherhood retreat in Portland in October 15 through 17 of 2026. And then our next fatherhood retreat, November 12th through the 14th in Austin, Texas. So if you're looking for good Father's Day ideas, if you're looking for, just a time to get away, these events have become something that we all treasure. Would is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or a girls' weekend. Because this is what I keep seeing. When we went to Franklin Holt, like 5 and 6 girls coming down from Michigan and Minnesota and North Dakota.
Oh, really?
Groups coming together and staying longer and just having so much fun.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was a very cool time. And so those are coming up. We also have some fun, announcements that we're going to share with you. Some resources coming out this summer, even soon, that we'll tell you more about. But we're going to respond to some of your questions. And I mean, truly, the list that we have, the running list of questions we capture from live events and from emails that come in, I don't know if we'll ever make it through. I mean, the list is staggering. Am I correct?
Oh, at this point, we're having to like consolidate it into themes so that we can at least cover some of the themes. But I'd say keep sending in questions.
Please,
because especially like, sometimes we'll get so many questions about one topic that we'll just decide we need to just do a whole episode or multiple episodes on that topic because there's so many people wrestling with it. Mm. We're actually about to do a couple on like ADHD and parenting neurodiverse kids and man, yes, my mind is blanking on. Yeah. We're about to do a bunch of recordings. So just any questions pertaining to that or anything specific, keep sending them.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you for saying that. I absolutely agree. Because it helps us know what's the real pain point. And also, we just have to say that anyone would ask our opinion on anything is very humbling. And so we just, with humility and a spirit-filled heart, we want to respond to these. So that's what we're going to do today. And I actually kind of want to move through some categories. You did a great job of making a note. I have my phone here because I just want to be on my phone as much as I can. Mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. But a couple different categories. And the categories that you put them in, which I thought was helpful, I kind of want to take one from each and see how far we can go. So we got personal formation, parenting, marriage, and generational stuff or generations. So I want to start with personal formation. And why I do is because I think this is a topic that's pretty broad, but we could go all over the place. But I know Phil and Diane, you'll have a ton of wisdom and experience with this. And I know we have our own, at least, I think, touch point and experience with some of this. And so it has to do with church and church hurt, actually, which I think is a really important thing that a lot of people actually hold. So how to navigate church hurt while wanting to keep your kids and family involved in church. How do we navigate church hurt while wanting to keep our kids involved and our families involved?
That question makes me really sad. Because we have spent almost our entire adult lives in church ministry. And the idea that the shepherds themselves often hurt the people that they're called to love and serve and lay down their lives for. Yeah. Just honestly, I just have to say, if you are navigating church hurt, I am so sorry. I am so deeply sorry. I think the most important thing is, if you can, think it through very carefully and separate what a leader has done to you, or how they've hurt you, or how they've rejected you, or how they haven't been a good representative of God himself, and the way he loves. If you can try to separate that from your view of the Father, the most tragic thing that happens is in church hurt, when somebody also just feels like, well, that must be the way God is. And I think that sometimes takes somebody helping you with it too. Yeah. And as well as being in the scriptures and being careful to put on a lens that isn't a correct lens about what the Bible actually says, the way God is. I think it's just really important, worth going after the separation, saying, but God is really not like this, and I love him. And his leaders mess up sometimes, oftentimes. Yeah. And we have seen over years and years of ministry that what happens, what sneaks up for leaders, is their identity becomes so wrapped up in their ministry and their position and their job. And it just begins to fragment people in really unhealthy ways.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the thing that comes to my mind is it, before we even talk about how to include your family, I think to any leader that's listening, this is why it's so important to take your own advice and invitation to formation, because it's so interesting as leaders, as we almost can find ways to wiggle out of, well, I mean, I'm a leader, so I don't necessarily, it doesn't have to necessarily look the same for me, or it's just interesting the dances that I think some of us do. But I do think it just makes me think of the person that is unintentionally causing church hurt. Yeah. So many good men and women are unintentionally hurting a lot of people because they're not aware of their shadow side and how it's impacting those around them. And the problem isn't that we all have stuff. It's just those people that will maybe kind of push it under the rug and say, well, it's not that bad, or it's not that big of a deal. When you lead, you affect more people. And the scariest thing about influencing more people is that you hurt more people. And so that's the hard part. So many people can be going to church and you could, as a leader, be unintentionally causing loads of hurt and not even know it because of your unwillingness to set up even structures in a certain way and setting up the church to function in a healthy way. Like things that are just very, very important to the health of a church. you might not be even aware of because it's not on your radar. So I think it starts there too. It's just leaders taking responsibility to say, hey, I've got to go on this journey myself, the culture I create. Mm-hmm. But to the question though, like how do we include our kids, include our family and church and continue to make that a priority even when there's hurt or maybe it's just not a season where, you know, churches, it's not the best fitting church situation for your family. Maybe like, how do we do that? Elizabeth, Phil, respond.
Well,
give me some thoughts.
I love the way this person is asking this question. If they're navigating their own hurt, but wanting to keep their kids involved in church. And so I think that shows the heart right there. And I think we often discount when stuff like that is happening, what we're actually teaching our kids without intentionally teaching it to them in a positive or negative way. But you have the opportunity with like appropriate details to be able to even bring your kids into that, to give them a framework of what the church actually is and the flawed, on one side, it's very flawed. On another side, it's very beautiful and very holy. We live this side of heaven. So it's not, it's, you are never going to find a church that hurts nobody, as sad as that is. And you are bringing your own wounds into every church that you attend, every community group, every friendship, every leadership position. You're bringing, everyone's bringing their own wounds to that. And we have the opportunity to be a huge part of each other's healing, or with lack of awareness, like you were talking about, or if we're not healing and growing, we can cause a lot of hurt. That's going to be at every church you ever go to. So if our kids can learn that truth from a really young age, they're not going to have a false understanding of elevating leadership in a church to a position that they are supposed to be completely flawless. Now, obviously, there is a higher standard that those leaders are held to, but they're not God. And so I think even bringing your kids into that of like, yeah, church is messy and we have some hurt that we're working through and we're trying to figure out if we can stay here. Or we're visiting other churches to see if God's calling our family somewhere else that would be a better fit. But teaching them how to navigate church, because they're going to have to navigate it as they get older. And if we're teaching them that church is a spectator sport where we just come and we get all of our needs met and we watch what happens and we talk about what we don't like and talk about what should be better, well, we're not actually teaching our kids what the church is.
Yeah.
And so I think you bring your kids along, again, with appropriate conversation, not bringing them into every single thing you are feeling.
that's wise.
You have the opportunity to give your kids what maybe you are now wishing you had of an understanding of how to navigate all that. You get to show them right in front of them what that looks like. And that will be a huge gift to their future.
I'm excited to hear what you have to say, Phil. And because on the note that you're just highlighting is how much it's important to explain to our kids what church is for, even just that detail. Like so many of us think that church is to get our needs met. And in reality, church is actually for us to serve and use the gifts God's given us to encourage and build up the body. But we miss that in our culture. And so how can your family serve? You can serve at a church that you, and maybe church hurt or maybe, is one part of it, but you can still serve even though church is like difficult. And so it's just to say that I know for me, specifically for our family, what we have found very helpful is, hey, we go to church even when it doesn't feel fun. Like this is something that we do. And that you have to remember your kids will mimic whatever you model. So if you model inconsistency and bashing church culture when you're not at church or even while at church, they mimic that. They learn how to do that through you. And so I just think it's so important to help them see what church is for, what it is not for. But Phil, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, it's hard to know because how to answer this question, because church hurt is a term that's being kind of thrown around now.
You're right.
And it could be all the way from like a leader that, you know, definitely was living in sin and kept leading and there was all kinds of dysfunction everywhere to, well, I was leading this group and it outgrew me and they tried to tell me that I needed to let somebody else take it over and I was hurt by that, you know. So those kind of things happen in ministry sometimes. You know, I know when Brooke, when we planted a church together in Portland, it was just exploding in size. And we had some people that helped out at the beginning, but weren't capable of leading 200 high schoolers, whatever. Yeah. And so you have to go through leader as a leader. You have to make decisions along the way. But I think leaders are supposed to lead the way Jesus led. Mm. Jesus was a servant leader. Mm. And so, you know, there's all kinds of books have been written on servant leadership. Mm. And I think, you know, I look back on my years leading, and I remember one time in particular where I kind of lost my cool, and all I did was raise my voice, but I felt an immediate quenching of the spirit, like that I wasn't representing God's long suffering to this difficult situation that I was dealing with. So I think, you know, to leaders, like what you were saying, Brooke, is that leaders need to realize it's a high and holy calling and a privilege to lead, but we lead by laying down our life. And I'm just finished reading Luke today. So I just read a couple of days ago, The Last Supper. And in, you know, it's so cool to read the different accounts of the different gospels. In Luke's gospel, Jesus is doing the Last Supper. And in that passage, it says, and they were arguing about which one was the greatest. Mm-hmm. In that account, it's happening at the Last Supper, which if you go in John's account, he's taking a towel and washing the disciples' feet. Mm. And he's saying, who's greater, the master or the servant? Well, obviously the master. Well, I, your master, have taken the towel and washed your feet. So I think that if I'm a parent with my kids, I need to prayerfully and humbly examine why am I feeling hurt and what really happened. Is it of that magnitude that we should consider going somewhere else, or is this something that I need to forgive this leader and pray for this leader? You know, Jesus said that we should pray even for our enemies. So I think there's a time to pray for the leaders, and there's a time to go and in love work out the conflict and say, can I meet with you? I was really hurt when this happened, and can we resolve it? And sometimes I think some of the church hurt can be resolved through doing what the Bible actually says, that we're supposed to actually, you know, resolve conflict together. And then I think, you know, with children especially, I mean, we have, like Diane and I love that. That's why Diane said it just breaks my heart that people would even experience church. We love the church. And Jesus is, he established the church. You know, I mean, it's his church. And he said, upon this rock, I will build my church. That was on Peter's confession, you are the Christ. So it's Jesus' church. So I think that we have to, with our kids, we need to remind it. It's Jesus' church, and we get to be part of it. Mm. You know, remember when we planted Solid Rock, we used to say all the time, church is not that place I go to. It's this group, this family that I'm part of. Mm-hmm. And so that said, there might be a time where for the health of your family, there is a better fit for you somewhere else. But I think that should always be handled prayerfully and carefully. But, you know, the most important thing is to point your kids to Jesus and say, yes, you know, our leaders are imperfect. And, you know, I mean, we've all seen some horrible things happen by leaders. And it shakes people's faith. Yeah. And I think even in those times, you can go to your kids and say, yes, isn't that sad that leader was not able to realize that they were the model for all of us? Yes. Servant-hearted leadership, and in their own weakness, they chose a broad path that led to destruction. But Jesus will never do that for you.
Yeah.
And I think we point him to Jesus, and isn't great that he will never let you down? Like that song we used to think, I'm never going to let you down. You know, you're never going to let me down.
What you're saying is so important when it comes to this idea of explaining to your kids. There's this concept called the narrative void. And when we don't make sense of reality for our kids, oftentimes they will, in that void, fill in that they are the problem or something with our family is the problem. And so there is such a even psychological power and spiritual power and practical power in explaining to your kids what is going on in reality. The other night, I was talking with Duke about some stuff, and he was feeling some things, and it was so amazing because he was feeling overwhelmed by some stuff without going into any detail. And basically, when we were talking, all I did was explain to him what was actually going on. Like, here's what's going on. Here's where you need to be a little, like, concerned would be even too strong a word, but here's where you don't have to worry. This is not all the way over here. You put it in its proper place for them. And when you do that, it helps them make sense of reality, understand, and it leads to way better integration and connection. So it's just so important that even with church, all the way to church, to their emotions, to the family situation, that we're explaining what is actually going on to them, because it's huge. But I know you have one more thought, Phil and Diane, you have one.
Well, yeah. So I think, you know, let's take those words, church hurt. Okay. So we talked a little bit about what not to do with your kids. You know, it's a chance to model for your kids what to do when you're hurt. Because none of us go through life without being hurt.
Yeah, it's true.
And even in my later years, the things that have happened to me that have wounded me. So what do I do with that? So that's where Hebrews comes in. Yeah, I just thought, I don't know why I don't normally open to Hebrews, but you know, the verse, I'm not even going to read that one verse, which is be careful that no bitterness spring up in you and by it many be defiled. So if I become bitter at the church or at the pastor or at my husband or at my whatever, then all this defilement's going to come out of me. But I think when you point them to Jesus, we can talk about how he is the perfect leader and the perfect savior and the perfect lover.
And that's what they
want. One of the books Diane will maybe someday get to is, she wants to call it what to do with all that hurt. You know, so that's another book. But I was just thinking of Hebrews 4, where I would point my kids to Jesus, who is called our high priest, and he's perfect. We do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. In other words, he actually, in Isaiah, he's the man of sorrows acquainted with grief. So he feels the hurt that anyone is feeling, whether the church hurt them or the church, it's usually a leader that hurt them. He feels that, he's grieving with them. And so, you know, you need to go to the Lord and say, Lord Jesus, you are my high priest and you understand my weakness right now, my tendency to want to get angry and bitter and lash out. And you were tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. So he knows what that feels like, but he never sinned. And so I just think, what a great opportunity in our hurt to realize again our own weakness. You know, Elizabeth, you quoted Galatians 6, I think, recently, maybe in one of your teachings at the motherhood retreat, you know, that when someone is caught in a fault, we who are spiritual should restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, lest we too be tempted. In other words, so I think this is a chance to help maybe our kids, the one that's been hurt. This is a chance to help them in a spirit of gentleness and help them understand how to handle her.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you. Diane, what's your thought? And then I want to move on to a marriage question, but what's your...
Just too brief. Number one, tell your kids the truth. Do not hide the truth of what is going on in a church leadership crisis from your kids. So the first time this really came to us, we were at a wonderful church in Santa Cruz. And first, the lead pastor was caught in adultery. And within weeks, four weeks, the beloved, the really beloved family pastor, same thing. And there were only four pastors on staff.
Oh, my goodness.
It was, you know, pretty disastrous. We couldn't really be meeting in the church office because it needed to be handled really well and privately. So we met at our house. John Mark was 8 years old. So Rebecca would have been about five. Elizabeth, you were a little toddler and unaware of all the meetings, all the elder meetings, all day long meetings going on at our house.
Wow.
So we brought... We brought John Mark especially into it. He needed to understand. He was very aware. If we had hidden from him what had happened, I mean, he already understood what adultery was at that point.
Yeah.
But it gave him a context for this kind of stuff happens. And I think it's really important not to hide that stuff from your kids.
That's good.
Just really handle it with a great deal of sensitivity and care. Give them lots of room to talk it through. But the other thing is, neither Phil nor, well, I especially, didn't grow up in church. So I know from a whole different perspective what it is to not have a church and not have these people who actually know you, know your kids, care about them, pray for them, support you. It's a really lonely thing to be a family that isn't part of a church.
Yeah.
And so I think I can always have a lot of grace for the church's flaws because it's amazing to be, it's amazing for our kids to grow up in a church. It was amazing for me at 15 to be enveloped by a family unlike my own and people who adopted me and cared about me and watched over me and taught me. So I will always be very defensive of the church with the capital C because I know what it's like to not have that. And I've also been through in church leadership a lot of hard things and crises. And so I also know that the church, as much as I love and value her as a whole, is also limps very badly and hurts people in the process.
Yeah. Really well said. And that's a long answer to that question to whoever had it. So you asked, so we gave it to you. But hopefully, I truly think, you know, those takeaways of helping them understand what the church is and the narrative void and explaining and all of that. Like, please take that. Okay, so this is a marriage question. Are we ready? So where is the line between absorbing small things and addressing issues so resentment doesn't build up? And for this one, I want to ask whoever, I think, like, whichever one of us is more leans towards resentment should maybe address this first.
Why don't you just say Elizabeth?
I didn't say that. No, I wasn't saying you specifically. I was meant in the couples. I mean, in our couple, I mean, you do feel that way? I'm just kidding. No, just saying, like, I think, because for example, this is going to be different if you are more prone to resentment, this is going to be probably a very helpful question to respond to. If that's not necessary, we all have a certain level of, I think, resentment for sure. Yeah. So I think we will all have a response to this. I'm just saying this is if you maybe have, like, I know you are very open about this, but so why don't you start us? What's that line between absorbing small things and addressing issues so that you don't rage? No resentment. I'm kidding.
Well, I think resentment's so tricky. You know, scriptures call it a root of bitterness.
Yeah.
Like you don't see a root. You don't know it's growing. It's not a problem until it's a massive problem, right? Yeah. And like you think of like the huge, I remember when we lived in LA.
Oh, yes.
The sidewalks were just destroyed by trees that had been there hundreds of years and these huge roots that would just, you know, would be like our kids would be scootering and just
they'd fall
on their face because
so
of
much concrete and face
roots. Yes. But then I also think of like when you rip a plant out and just the wiry roots are just sticking up out of the ground. And even those that aren't huge, like the ones that split a sidewalk, are really hard to get out, but we don't even know that they're there. And I think that, especially in the context of marriage, we all struggle with resentments like that because we are doing life so close to somebody else, seeing all their beautiful parts and all their really broken parts. And then we have kids and life is moving really quickly and we don't always have time to do the thoughtful, deep repairs for just like the little annoyances, right? So then you don't even always recognize the amount of resentment that is built up, the roots that you've been unintentionally feeding until, you know, something tips it over the edge. This is huge for me because I love to keep peace until all of a sudden I can't keep it anymore. And then my pattern is to then explode and bring up everything that has been under the surface. And I think after like so many years of becoming aware of that, I now oftentimes will catch myself with this like fear of something becoming resentment that pushes me to, we need to talk about it right now because I don't want to get mad about this later. So a question that I started asking myself a long time ago, but need to continue to ask myself more, but is, can I let this go without resentment that's going to come up later? Can I / should I like, because sometimes I do think the Holy Spirit's like, come on, Elizabeth, like, just let that go. Like, you don't need to hold on to that. And I think in marriage, we need to always be asking the Holy Spirit that question. Like, do I need to just let this go? And can I, with where I'm at in my maturity right now, with the power of the Holy Spirit, can I actually authentically do that and not bring it up again later? Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of growth I would like to see in this area. But I think that's how we slowly become aware of the things that slowly build over time and become bigger things, is by asking ourselves those types of questions. What we see David do in the Psalms, he's constantly asking himself questions, asking his soul questions. Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes there's some people who are very easily prone to that sort of contemplative, like, asking ourselves questions life. And then there are others who are maybe really afraid of it and it feels just really weird. But I think, I think God is all about that. Even when you see the life of Jesus and the way he knew exactly what the people needed, but he asked them questions so that they could vocalize what they actually needed, what they were feeling, what they were experiencing. And I have no doubt that Jesus did that with great intention. He could have just walked around and said, this is what you're feeling and thinking. This is what you need to do. This is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And he pretty much never did that. Mm-hmm. He had them vocalize everything that they needed. He usually had them do something and then he would heal them. So I think if we could start to bring that into just even our thoughts about our marriage, especially when we find ourselves reacting because resentment has built up, before we even talk to our spouse, we need to ask ourselves those questions.
That's good.
I have a couple thoughts. I think I can be pretty brief too. So a little story. Diane and I were driving just the other day. We were having a discussion and we had sort of a different of opinion about it. And it's a little bit tense.
Yeah.
We never got to where our friend Emerson Eggerichs calls heated fellowship. It never got there. Okay. But later on, before we were getting ready, was at an event that the four of us were at. Diane said, are we okay? So she was checking in.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I think we're okay. You know, so I think there's a time when there's some tension going on, if you can catch it early. Mm-hmm. Which reminds me of a verse in the Song of Solomon, which is God's handbook for beautiful romance and marital love. The bride says to the bridegroom, catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom.
Oh, that's
so good. So when you see it starting to get a little touchy before the vineyard gets destroyed, if you can catch it. And so 1 Corinthians 13, you know, it says love keeps no record of wrongs is one, but there's a Phillips translation, love is not touchy. So I think there's a time to just overlook, she's exhausted, I'm exhausted, or I had, you know, there's a time to just forgive. You know, love covers a multitude of sins, it says in the New Testament. So there's a time to just cover your spouse. Hey, you know what? I've got you covered. Yeah. I don't even need to talk about this. I just need to forgive because I've got my own log in my own eye. But there is a time where one of you needs to say to the other, in this case, the Song of Solomon, she says to him, let's catch the foxes while our vineyard is good. So I think there's a time to overlook and there's a time to say we need to talk about it.
And maybe a grid through which to judge whether this is a time to overlook or a time to address it. I think there are two questions. Is this a pattern that is constantly hurting, in which case you generally need to, maybe not in the moment, but that generally needs to be addressed. Right. I'm seeing this pattern. We need to talk about the pattern. And the other is this from my past? Because for me, a lot of the big arguments that we have been in over the years have very much had been connected to my past, to my family of origin, which makes me see things that are not there. Phil is pretty much without guile. Who he is who he is. How he is how he is. But I'm really good at reading things into, and if it comes off as judgment, reading things into his motivation. And that a lot of that is from my past. Yeah. And I have to own my past. Mm-hmm. And I have to own the sensitivities to my past and be able to talk my own self down. And Phil also lives with my past. Mm-hmm. So he also is able to now, but he couldn't before. Now he's able to say, okay, this is the past coming up and biting Diana. Mm. And it really helps. Like, Elizabeth, you talk so beautifully, even this last weekend, about knowing your spouse's story. Mm-hmm. And that's where that comes in. Yeah. I think understanding, is this a pattern? Is this from my own past? And maybe even, is this from his past and he's working on it and it's coming along, or her past and she's working on it. And I got to be patient for a while. Yeah. Those are three P's. Is that amazing?
You must be married to a pastor.
Past, is it? No, is it a pattern?
Okay.
Is it from your past?
And do I need to be patient?
And do I need to be patient?
Whoa.
Look at that.
She's really good at this.
Forget
you. She came up with another sermon that I want to preach that she came up with. We don't have time to go to that today.
You know, I'm liking this alliteration coming back in style. It was not in style like 20 years ago. You couldn't use alliteration.
It's coming back, maybe. Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm thinking of a little illustration. Like, you grew up not knowing which mom you were going to get. Angry mom or happy, loving mom. And so I remember, like, one morning I came out to make coffee and I just was not awake yet. And she goes, "Are you mad at me?"
Yeah.
And so what she needed, she just needed a hug and needed me to smile at her. That's all it was. But it was because she was reading me through her upbringing, not knowing which mom she was getting. So,
And to the question, like, where's that line between absorbing and addressing, which everyone has responded to in one way or another. I think the only addition I would add to it is that so interesting thinking of the line, because love covers a multitude of sin. Mm-hmm. There's a responsibility to absorb in marriage that I don't think we love. And I come from, for different reasons, we will bring things up. So for example, my family of origin had so many secrets involved. Mm-hmm. And so I bring everything up and want to talk about it because I don't want anything to not be talked about, mm-hmm. like to be on the table. But there's a line where that's just too much. And so it's learning, like, okay, what things do need to be absorbed? And then I would say not resentfully absorbed, meaning like, mm-hmm. I'm not going in my mind, I'm absorbing this right now, but you don't really mean it. You're just waiting for the better time to bring it up. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing.
Right.
And so when we're talking about not letting it build up, it's like, can I truly, with God's grace and mercy towards me, but also then towards my spouse, absorb this frustration, this irritation, knowing the situation, knowing the heart. And I think this is where the last thing we'll say is believing in someone's goodwill is really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we assume the best, this is going to sound stupid, but it's very true. We don't assume the worst. And it's a very different disposition when you are assuming someone's best. Like, I bet you they didn't mean to have that tone. They're probably just really overwhelmed. I bet you they don't actually feel that crazy towards me right now. They're coming across this way because of X, Y, and Z. And so I think when we believe in our spouse's best, it helps us figure out that line of like, yeah, sometimes we just need to absorb. It's actually biblical. It's really helpful. Mm-hmm. The phrase that I shared with you guys the other day in marriage, there was a translation that was talking about it's a husband's job to serve and satisfy his wife as a way to love. That's the idea, to serve and satisfy. And it's like, you know, that's a really helpful phrase. You can serve your wife in lots of different ways. You can serve her, men, by just simply serving practically. You can also satisfy her in all sorts of ways by not bringing up things that don't need to be brought up. Certain things do need to be addressed, but it's far less than I think actually probably we would assume needs to be. So, great response, guys. Great response. Let's talk about really quick some parenting. Because it's so easy. So let's just talk about that real quick. Because it's always a revolving door. Here's a parenting question. How do you give equal attention to all your kids when one has extra needs? You don't. Let's go to the next question. Actually, can I respond to this really quick to start? I actually think you don't. That wasn't actually a joke. I don't think you can give equal attention to all your kids, but one has special needs. Elizabeth, I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about this, and Phil and Diane as well. But in our situation, if we tried to give equal time to each kid, it would not pan out well, and it wouldn't even be fair to us. Or it's just the wrong way to look at it, like 50-50-50. You know, like, yeah, let's give everyone the same percentage. My parents actually did this, and some of it felt nice, and then some of it felt forced. It was like around Christmas time. It was like, everyone has to have the same number of presents. Everyone has to have the same amount of this and this. And their heart was good. Their heart was like, we just want to make sure that nobody's feeling like they're left out. But I think it's also figuring out what do your kids need. And one of the things that we had figured out, our kids use the word just like your kids. Well, that's not fair. Have your kids said this? Like, right? Oh, yeah. That's not fair. Well, what someone helped us see in the copious amounts of therapies we've been in is fair is what that person needs for their brain and their body to be healthy. So for example, when it comes to snack time, certain moments, well, Birdie got a snack, I should get one. Well, Birdie's body and brain are different than yours. So what does your body need? Let's see. Are you actually hungry? What have you, like, is this actual something, or you just saw someone get this thing and now you want this thing? It takes more work, but it's just to say, we don't actually even try to approach it as equal because, for example, Birdie needs a lot more of our attention in different ways. And I know that we try to divide that up and we try to always check in and say, okay, which kid needs us? It's kind of a always checking in situation. And I, what I love about our team is that you guys will color this response that I even have right now in a deeper way, but it's just to set the stage. The goal isn't equal amounts of time. The goal is, who is your kid? And what do they need? Some seasons they're going to need a ton of time, and some seasons they're going to need to be a little less. This is going to take you knowing your kids and being intentional about who they are and knowing their needs in the moment. But other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, what I hear you saying, and exactly what my mind goes to, is it's actually way less about fairness or equal time spent. It's about seeing them.
Yeah.
And some kids, like you said, need a lot more time. And some kids, like I think of our house right now, our older kids don't need a ton of time, but they need two things. They need access to us when they do need the time to talk. They need to know that they have access to us emotionally when they want it on their largely on their terms, when they're ready to have a conversation. Not that we're not also trying to create access as much as possible and having conversations all throughout the day. But yeah, so they need to know when they need to talk, we'll drop everything. And these are the house rules. These are what the younger kids go do. Because when you tell me you need me, I'm going to be available to you, or I'm going to tell you when I am available. So they need access. And they need us to tell them we see what they're seeing. Because there are times when it is frustrating. A meltdown is happening. They would rather things be peaceful. They would like to have a conversation. They would like to have a friend over, but we're at therapy. And they need us to just be able to tell them, hey, I see that this is a thing. I see that this is taking me away and that you're feeling feelings about that right now. And that's okay. And I can hold space for what you're feeling, and I can hold space for the meltdown, even if I don't always feel like I have enough to hold space for both. But like, just naming, I think we're not doing our kids a disservice when we have a kid in the house that has extra needs, whatever those might be. We're doing our other kids a disservice if we don't, in a very loving, not like embittering them against their sibling, but tell them that we know that that's happening. Because in doing that, they feel really seen. Like, okay, I'm not just supposed to stuff it and be fine. Or the anger that they might naturally feel because of that, they're not just left on their own. Like what you talked about, a narrative void, like them having to try to process all this that they're feeling, and they feel guilty that they're mad at their sibling with autism, or like just normalizing it and naming it for them. Hey, this is messy, isn't it? Like, this is really messy. And so I think our focus needs to be on, are we seeing them, especially the ones who are quiet and not going to be super loud about their needs? Mm-hmm. Those are the ones we need to think about. Well, are we seeing them?
Invite them in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I think I've shared this probably multiple times on the podcast, but there's a woman who we've known for a long time, Vicki Hughes, who has had a very special needs daughter for, I mean, she's what, in her mid-30s now? They've been at it a long time. And I asked her this question kind of at the beginning of Birdie's journey. Like, how do I navigate all this with all the different therapies and all the, like, just all my attention is going to this? And she just said, you know, what really has kind of helped us and what has been a realistic rhythm over the course of years and years and years is whenever Rachel was doing well and there wasn't a medical crisis happening and she was doing okay, those were our seasons to really pour into our other two kids and create lots of extra space and fun and intentional time with them, knowing that there would be other seasons where we were not going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But just having that as a framework of like, I think of that's been so helpful to me in times where the therapy has lessened with Birdie and the schedule's a little bit different of like even just being able to see from just logically like, oh, this is, we've taken this off our plate over here, which means that margin needs to get moved over to more intentional time with the other kids. I think it's just, a helpful, it's not equal, it's a dance. Yeah. And especially, I think we like to think of it as like this formulaic, well, I just need to make sure that I'm giving everybody exactly what they need and check things off the box. And that's not how life actually works.
Nope.
And so I think instead we need just like overarching frameworks and check-ins and be communicating as a husband and wife, like, hey, this kid needs to have a deep conversation. I've not had capacity to do it. And I'm not even sure they want to have it with me. But somebody needs to just like sit and be with them.
You. Somebody,
but
you
know what I mean?
Just
like,
you.
Just like, yeah. If one of you is noticing that's this kid's great. Needing something, between the two of us, let's try this week to make sure it happens. And you're working together as a team again to see each individual kids. And this is where, if you can, and it's not always possible, but like parenting in team is you're going to have unique insight. Like, I have unique insight into the kids in our house who are more like me. And I can clue Brooke in on, hey, you'd be the right person to talk to this one about this. But here's what this kid, here's the approach I think would be helpful, and vice versa. You do the same mm-hmm. with me. And so I think that's the beauty of when our marriage is doing okay and we're learning how to communicate together and we can parent out of that in team, then we're going to do a lot better job seeing our kids with maybe the seemingly lesser needs. All kids yeah. have lots of needs. Does that?
It's great.
What
I want to move to a generations question in a second, because I know there's a lot of different things. I think you said that really well, but there's a mm-hmm. generations question, which I want to end us with, but I want to hear from you guys, Phil and Diane first, especially on this, because it's really, really prevalent. This is the prevalent thing that we're seeing more and more. And I think it's a great, great thing for us to end on today. But here's the question. Any tips on navigating a mother-in-law who has retired from motherhood? How do we healthily engage with that through the lens of honoring your mother while seeing who the Lord has created her to be? So how do we navigate mother-in-law who has retired from motherhood? That's an interesting detail.
What do you suppose retiring from, like, she's no longer...
We're going to fill in some gaps.
My guess would be that it's a lot of what you're seeing of your generation right now.
Yeah.
I did my time.
Yeah. Okay.
Taking care of kids, mm-hmm. cooking dinners, mm-hmm. babysitting, mm-hmm. so to speak. I did my time. Now it's your time to do that. And I'm going to go do my thing. And I'm going to love my grandkids. And I'm going to love you. But I'm done mm-hmm. with the practical of being a mom.
And so this is just everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just everywhere. It seems like there's no in between or very little in between.
Yeah.
From all the way an absentee, you're on your own, to mm-hmm. one who is way too involved in telling you what to do, even though they had kids in a completely different generation mm-hmm. and just giving constant opinions. But I think the absentee, I think if you can help that woman, especially if she was an involved mom if she was an intentional mom, meaning that she really did, she wasn't even just babysitting her kids. She was really involved. I think she needs a vision for what can be. Because we haven't really seen a lot of this. It's been a few generations, at least, I think. Be interesting to trace how far back. Since we have seen, at least in the United States, multi-generational families that function well and give a real rootedness to the coming generations. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we don't really have a vision. And we have been being told for ages, you're done when your kids are 18 and back off. They're on their own. I know. You're no longer responsible. You're no longer needed. We don't want your voice anymore. Mm-hmm. We've been told that so long that we believe it, and it's not true.
Yeah.
It is like all of those lies. There's some truth to it. You're needed in a completely different capacity. So yes, something major happens when your children grow up. But if she could have a vision, I had no idea, no clue that I could have this stage of my life right now, which is where I have grandkids who genuinely are interested in me and genuinely like me and want to hang out with me and are super responsive to me. They certainly like me better than my own kids did when they were teenagers.
Your ama.
It's a completely different role. And it's it's like the best. Mm. It's the best. Like when your kids come over, Elizabeth, because we live so close to each other and we've made it very clear. Our house is your house. Don't ask permission if you want a snack.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, we have to do it a little different with the little kids. Yeah. But just make yourself at
when
home.
When Duke comes over.
Duke comes over and he's goes right for the ice cream. Or
to the pantry,
Scarlett comes over to the pantry and makes herself lunch because there's not good lunch at home. And
mom's on
it's,
also,
it's too healthy. It's too healthy.
Oh, yeah, we hear that.
No
yeah.
mac and cheese
and then
our
she
house.
Leaves the dishes in the sink. Because she can, because nobody else is leaving dishes in the sink and I have the capacity. It's just, or when they confide in me, if somebody had just painted a picture, if somebody could do a really great job of painting a picture of what can be, I think that would awaken some of the weariness that it sounds like this mother-in-law is. She burnt out. She maybe wasn't recognizing that she was overgiving, and now she's afraid of giving it all.
Well, can I maybe just, cause I don't want to, this isn't stop. Go. This is like a, I want you to keep going, but maybe to even insert right there is a really important detail of that when you don't know your own boundaries and own capacity, we tend to then overdo it as overcorrecting and to a point where you're like, now everything's done. You're like, no, it doesn't actually have to be that extreme. You probably just need a rhythm of rest, and maybe you have to have a mental moment where you're like, I actually need to know that I'm not going to be engaging in the same type of intensity. But you don't have to eject fully. That's the first thing. But then to the mother or to the daughter or to the son who's asking this, I think what is our response? Well, I think it is, first of all, you can't get your parents to be in a place that they don't want to be.
Yep.
This is very frustrating, by the way. You can't make your parents more interested in your life and your kids than they want to be. And that is really hard. Maybe you can have conversations potentially, but if you've had conversation and it's still not going well, I think there's a part there where you have to start grieving some of the sadness that your parents don't want to be as involved as you would have hoped them to be. And honestly, it's really complex, but it's also the narrative right now that our culture is saying, retire. You guys know this, retired, just literally give your life to yourself, give it back to yourself. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking to some people and their parents had split up and now in their older age, and now they're like, what do we do? What do we do with our lives? Like, and they're in a whole other problem, And so it's just to highlight what you're saying, that there's this world where, yes, I think we need to paint a picture for the mother and the father-in-law or the mother and father who are in their older stages of how good it can be, but then also really doing a good job for the adult child to know, like, you can't push your parents where they don't want to go. And that's really, really sad. But you can invite them a lot and you can constantly say, hey, I really would love to, like, make myself, my time available. But it's just a really, it's a heartache. It's a deep heartache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it's widespread heartache. And it feels like rejection, I think, to a generation that is working harder than they have ever worked. Or maybe even many, it's been many generations since a generation like yours that has had to work so hard just to do what actually needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that the generation before, my generation, is often not recognizing that.
Yeah.
And yet there are many people who are actually involved in weekly childcare because they love their grandkids and they're benefiting from it. They're going to benefit from that for years and years and years. I think you're right. I think you have to grieve. But also I would say, if at all possible, if you can study that person and see what they could uniquely contribute. I just was reading a book that said that all of us, we have every single person has two most basic emotional needs. And number one, we need to belong. And number two, we need to matter. If you can help your parents see that they actually belong, so you're inviting them into the family, and give them something that they can do that is up their alley that matters.
Mm-hmm.
I think some grandparents, not the ones who've completely checked out and they're being completely selfish and they're trying to find happiness in
other things,
all the things that they thought they wanted to do. But if you, like Elizabeth, you have done a marvelous job of telling me how I can help best. And you geared around who I am, not who I'm not. Being able to invite your parents in specifically might help those who are actually just don't know what to do. They've had no example. None of their friends are doing it. But they might just need to matter in a specific way. I'll give an example of my dad. He was a really good man, but all he knew was to work. He grew up in poverty. He worked from a very young age. And so giving him work to do would allow him to be present and even present with you kids. Just he would come to our house and I would have a long list of things to fix. That was Dad's thing. He could fix anything. And as long as he had still some things on the list to fix, he would say, as soon as the list was over, he would leave.
Both like so awesome and so sad.
It is awesome
for you, Phil.
It was awesome and it was sad, but he was such a good man.
There was
also allowance for that's all he knew. That's all he was capable of.
Totally,
And then also he loved sports, and that was hard for me because none of my kids were athletes and none of my kids loved team sport. So there was a feeling sometimes for me of the only thing Dad is really interested in is sports. My kids are into completely different things. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's it's good. Messy. And
it's
I
so
think
messy.
We're some of us are trying. And one more last thing I'll say, I've been talking too much, but you can forge a new path. You can decide, I'm going to do grandparenting different and start in your 30s and 40s. You can start even just creating your own kind of vision board for what you want to bring into the next generation. And that's fun. I mean, my kids know, my grandkids know, I get all the best children's books. I spend a ridiculous amount of money. I see that there's a Caldecott Award on a book, and it's in my library.
I don't even know what that is.
Okay, so that means that's a children's book that is really, really great.
You don't have to tell me, but I mean, this shows the differences, yes.
But I mean, I mean, just being who you are, not who you're not, I think is important too.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. Phil, you're a great grandfather. Yes. Any thoughts on this one? And a great in-law.
I'm not a great grandfather, but if you mean I'm a great grandfather.
I mean, great.
He's a great pops.
Pops.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is such a huge issue. I think it's so sad if I'm a parent in your stage and age and the parents do not see the joyful opportunity they have to lay down their life for their kids and their grandkids. You know, Proverbs says grandchildren are the crown of old men and the glory of sons is their father. So it's a generational thing. So if grandchildren are my crown or our crown, that doesn't mean I'm just supposed to strut around and play golf and say, yeah, I have some grandchildren. They think I'm great. No, they don't. They never see you. So it's like, so I think there's a responsibility and a privilege to come alongside. And that's a thing. When your kids are little, you are over them and you're, you know, they're commanded to honor you and you're commanded to raise them in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. But then even when your own kids, you know, get college age, you're kind of alongside them. Now, if they've accepted Christ, you're brothers and sisters in Christ. But then we get to come alongside Duke and Scarlett and Birdie and Sloan and our other grandchildren that don't live here. And we're figuring that out. So I think that the sadness is the grandparent that is like, I'm going to do my thing now. They think they're going to find all this joy and fulfillment, but it's going to find emptiness really fast.
Wow.
So I think that it's a spiritual problem. It's a spiritual issue. So a parent, if we're talking about Christian grandparents, if they truly are walking with the Lord, by then they should have figured out it's not all about you. It's about you laying down your life for others and asking God how he wants you to live out these last days of your life. Now, if I'm in your stage and age and I don't have a grandparent that is spiritually walking with the Lord enough to recognize that, what do I do about it? And I think that you guys have said so many good things, that you invite them in a way that they could actually fulfill it. Like, you know, you don't tell your dad to write a song. You know, I used to say, I can't fix anything, but I can write a song about the broken thing. You know, so it's like,
I'm writing songs
for my grandkids right now. One of my just wrote called Helicopter. Well, because Ellis is flying this helicopter around, well, Solomon doesn't have a helicopter. So I'm going to buy him a helicopter. And I already told him when you sing,
like a real
when
one?
You hear this song, this is what you do with the helicopter, you know. So I think that you can appeal.
Yeah.
You can just say, we really want you involved, Dad. Or we really need you involved, Mom, in our life. We're exhausted. We need help. And we want you to be part of our kids' lives. And then they have a decision to make. So I think the biblical mandate is when someone is in a position over you, in this case, they're your parent, you're commanded to honor them. You can appeal to them. And then if it doesn't go anywhere, I think that's where you need to pray. And God may provide another grandparent in your life. And I think that's where the church comes in. That's why we need to be connected, because it might be somebody else in the church that becomes like a grandfather or a grandmother to your kid. And then while you're feeling this wound, you can say to yourself, that's not the kind of grandparent I want to be one day. So you literally, if you get to live that long, and if Jesus return tarries that long, because you know what that felt like, what a motivator for you to say, when I get there, I'm going to be able to give to my grandkids what I didn't receive. And, you know, that's not going to help you right now, but it will at least plant a seed in you right now that's going to give you a very fulfilling life later, because you're going to realize that your role never ends. You're still a father and you're still a mother. So
I love that.
So that's my thoughts.
Well, I would just say thank you for responding to that, everybody, and for these questions. And again, thank you, everybody who is sending in questions. Please keep doing that and come back. We're going to be responding to more questions very soon, as we normally do. But thank you for listening to today's episode.